So again, this is the third day of our three-day retreat here in Tampa at the Franciscan Center on composting afflictive emotions. I would hope by this time the idea of composting afflictive emotions and what afflictive emotions are and where they come from is not such a mystery anymore. That through the talks, but primarily through your own work that you have done on the cushion and off the cushion, with the help of the people who have been guiding the meditations and the various other small groups and sharings of this retreat, that you are no longer a mystery to yourself, and why your life is the way it is, and why you are the way you are, and why you experience what you experience is very clear to you, and the causes, that which is supporting this type of activity within your body, within your speech, and within your mind, is clearly understandable. When it is clearly understandable, this deep, profound, personal identification we have with our stuff begins to lessen. We realize it's just stuff. And it is stuff that has entered our consciousness because of causes and conditions that began very early on in our life, and because of the multitudinous nature of experiences and interactions and all these various variables that have affected us. By the time we've gotten to where we've gotten, there's a lot of accumulation of stuff. What makes it so difficult for many of us is we call it my stuff. And we identify with it as something solid, permanent, real, and that is us. Upon deep looking, upon self-investigation, one sees that's not true at all. That's not really the way it is. It's just stuff. It is mine only in the sense that it's my job to deal with it. That's all. That's all. It's not my stuff. I buy a house. If it's a mess, I got to clean it up. When I sell the house, it's no longer my mess. But in a temporary way, I relate to it that way. So in terms of practice, I'm sure by now you understand the key piece. Well, let me just say, I'm sure you know, when we talk about the Buddhist meditative tradition, while there are many types of meditations, they really fall under three main categories. First, there is the meditative practice of mindfulness. Then there is the meditative practice of mental quiescence or calming the mind. And finally, there is the meditative practices dealing with insight, understanding. Understanding could be anything. And the understanding cultivates wisdom. And now, what does this mean in terms of what we're dealing with here? What it means is there has to be first mindfulness, which means is the capacity to see clearly what is present. If we do not have mindfulness, we are in darkness. And in darkness, all we can do is stumble about. We don't know where we are. We don't know what's before us. We don't know what's causing things to be there, be the way they are. All we can do is react. And we react totally from our conditioning. Mindfulness is that capacity to see what is present, to see what is before me, to see what I'm seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. That's the reality of my senses. But most importantly, because so much of the self-created suffering that we are mostly concerned with, that arises in the mind. So mindfulness of our mind, which means I am aware, I am present to the thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories that are arising in my mind. Without that, transformation and healing is impossible because we don't know what to transform. We don't know what to heal. We don't know what the problem is. All we can do is guess, or all we can do to go to others and pay them to guess for us. But, you know, it doesn't have to be any, this doesn't have to be a guessing game. Mindfulness will clearly reveal to us. Right? The same way if we are not blind, if we've had our eyes closed and we wake up, you know what I mean? You may wake up here at the Franciscan Center and because of your conditioning of being in other beds, before you open your eyes, you may not be sure where you are. You're just in that sleep state, but you don't know where you are. When you open your eyes, you immediately see, oh, I'm not in my usual bed. I'm in, and then you look around and then you identify, oh, I'm in, oh, that's right. Right? Only your mindfulness and capacity to be present will allow you to see where you are. So mindfulness is the ground of practice. And again, we cultivate mindful sitting, mindful breathing, mindful walking, mindful drinking, mindful eating, all those, all the mindfulnesses. But the key mindfulness for what we're doing here today is mindfulness of thoughts, feelings, and perceptions that are arising within me. Is that clear? I mean, that is the key. And it is not that difficult. It's really easy, because all you need to do is stop and ask yourself, you know, what's in my mind right now? What am I feeling right now? That's all. The same way, if you want to know where you are, all you need to do is open your eyes. You know, if you're lost in some drama and you want to know, well, what am I, what's actually going on in reality, you stop and you open your eyes and you see. You know, I'm here sitting in a meditation hall listening to a Dharma talk, right? And whatever my thoughts were, they were only going on in my mind. Oh, that's interesting. So mindfulness is the first aspect of Buddhist meditative practice. And again, as we've talked in the last few days, you can be mindful, you can practice mindfulness anywhere. Mindfulness practice does not just go on in the meditation hall. Mindfulness practice goes on wherever you are, wherever you live, whatever your life condition, whoever you're with, you can be mindful. Mindful of. Mindfulness always is mindful of something. So the wonderful practice of mindfulness is a practice that is perfect for people who lead busy lives, right? People who don't have time to make it to the meditation hall on a regular basis. Well, just be mindful at work, mindful with your kids, mindful in the kitchen, mindful in the closet, mindful wherever you are, mindful when running your errands. Don't lose yourself in dispersion, don't lose yourself in melodrama. Be present. Okay? The second aspect, which is called concentration, or mental quiescence, is the capacity of concentrating on something. And when you concentrate on something, it does calm because the energies of the mind that are usually going off in 25,000 directions are now focused. There's less dispersion. So the more that we are mindful and the more that we are present and in a concentrated way, in other words, we are stopping and we are present. So the mindfulness is like a running continuum, but it's also the capacity to stop and focus. And I assure you that if you want to free yourself from your self-created suffering, your mindfulness will reveal it is present to you, and your stopping will allow you to focus on it. I got to stop and look at this. Because when I am present to my mind, I realize it doesn't feel good. I am feeling afflicted. I'm feeling upset. I'm feeling stressed. I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling sad. I'm all over the place. You know what I mean? So it is only by our mindfulness reveals it, and then stopping allows us to really look at it. And when we stop and look at it, it immediately stops it growing. You know, in our intensive on deconstructing the myth of self, one of the required readings is Tolle, Eckhart Tolle, a very wise man. And he talks about the pain body. Are people familiar with Tolle? Yeah, so, you know, his teachings are very congruent with Buddha Dharma. But his conceptualization of this conditioned mind that has this capacity for creating dissatisfaction, he calls it a pain body. And one of the interesting things he says is the pain body, the same way we have the same way our physical body feeds on food, our pain body feeds on pain. So you'll notice that when it arises in a situation, when it's feeling a little irritated, a little angry, a little hurt, a little sad, a little, right? It's not satisfied. It wants to eat more. Right? So it'll take that little incident and it'll look around for other incidences that kind of are like it. And it'll remember it from the past, and it'll think about other areas, and it'll repeat it. You notice it'll repeat it over and over again, and you'll re-image it, and it's just eating. And once it's gotten bigger and bigger, and it's kind of done that one, it'll look around for more stuff to create pain. You know, other areas of your life that aren't working, or other people that you're pissed at or have hurt you, or you know what I mean? And if it's not in the present, you'll go back. You know, you don't care how far back. The pain body will just, you know, and you, right? And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But if you're not mindful, and if you don't stop that process, it will just continue according to habit energy. Unfortunately, it is not a good habit energy. It is a bad habit energy because it creates affliction. And when you're in your pain body, you don't see anything else. Remember we talked about in Buddhism, those are called obscurations. The afflictions are obscurations. They cover us. When you're in the pain body, all you see is pain. Right? If you're in the pain body about somebody else, all they are is a source of pain to you. If you're in your pain body about yourself, all you are is a source of pain to yourself. If you're in a pain body about your life, then your whole life stinks. I mean, if you're in your pain body about your past, your whole past is bad. If you're in your pain body about the future, the whole future looks terrible. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And that whole miserable process is all going on where? Steve, where is it going on?
In
your mind. And when you look for your mind, can you find it? No, not a trace. Fabrication, right, Alex? All fabrication. And yet we follow these fabrications around as if it's solid and real and is doing something worthwhile for us. moment, we can't help but notice that all it does is create what for us? Tony, what does it create for us?
Pain.
Right? So I recommend to everybody, if you ever want to create pain for yourself, find your pain body, bring it out, and let it start feeding. Right? Because if there's any part of you that knows how to create pain and suffering and dissatisfaction for yourself, it is your pain body. But if you, and we spent a lot of time in these talks over these past 2 days, there is another way. And if somehow your aspiration in life, somehow your intention in life, is not to live in pain and suffering and spread your pain and suffering to everybody around you, but if your aspiration in this life is goodness, is altruism, to be a source of well-being, all the things we heard about in our refuge and mindfulness training ceremony earlier, that somehow the purpose of life is, again, one has to, again, like I say, please, don't consider it settled. Our aspiration and our sense of what's meaningful and purposeful and of value in life has to be cultivated on a daily basis. Because it is weak, it is fragile, it is not as strong as our pain body and our conditioned body. Our pain body is very strong. Why is it strong? Because we have fed it. Nobody else has fed it. We have fed it. We might have gotten pieces of it from our parents, from other people. The pieces of it may have come from lots of different places, but it ended up where? In our own minds. And we have been feeding it incessantly. It is nobody else's but us. And so because we have fed it so long, it is strong. And it's used to being fed. But if you wake up to that, and hopefully these last 3 days have helped you to wake up to that, and you can really see it for what it is, and name it when it arises, and stop feeding it, stop nourishing and nurturing it. If you stop nurturing and nourishing and feeding those negative parts of you, they will diminish. They will grow weaker. That is science. It's not mysticism. It's not metaphysics. It's science. That is why we said in the fifth mindfulness training, a proper diet is essential for transformation. We have to know what's good to eat and what's not good to eat. And again, mindfulness stopping reveals that to us. So we have to be willing to be mindful, to stop. And that again goes on in the context of a bigger transformation in terms of what is my purpose, intention, aspiration in life. Without that, if we don't know where we're going, then you're always working on a case by case. Right? We're always working case by case. As I said yesterday, we're always rationalizing excuses. Well, this time it's okay to get pissed. Right? Well, this time it's okay to be afraid and anxious. Because, this time it's okay to be, to endlessly indulge ourselves and wallow in self-pity and hopelessness. I mean, we will always indulge ourselves because we have no real purpose in life. When you have a clear purpose that's yours, it's not anybody else's. It's not a certain religion's. It's not a certain creed. It's not a certain belief system that's external to you that somehow you ascribe to. But you have done your own deep work in yourself, and it's coming from you. You know what kind of life you want to lead. You know how you want to relate to human beings. You know how you don't. now you have something that situation by situation can guide you. But if you don't have that, you're going situation by situation, you will in most cases only be dealing with that situation in terms of your conditioning, which means your past. And as long as you're dealing things from the in a way that you've always dealt with things in a conditioned way, things will always continue the same way. It cannot change. Apple seeds do not create orange trees. It just can't happen. And continuing to nurture negative mind states, et cetera, cannot produce anything but negative mind states. So the Buddha says, if you want to know what your future will be, look at what you're doing in the present. Because your present is creating the future. You know, if your future is some hope that somehow, that somehow things will be different, you'll have a different mind state or something in the future, well, how are you going to get there? Tomorrow's mind state is being conditioned by today's mind state. So, please remember that. The third aspect of Buddhist meditation, after mindfulness and calming the mind and stopping and looking directly at, so one knows what's present, is this capacity for deep looking, for insight. So we can see under the surface. We can see the causes and conditions that are supporting this mind state. We can see the causes and conditions that may be supporting the, what's going on with the other person. We have that capacity. That's called understanding and compassion. We can also have understanding of compassion for ourselves, but that only comes from this deeper looking under the surface into what is really supporting this to arise. When you understand what's supporting it to arise, you clearly understand its dynamics, and you can then choose to either support it, to let it go, to do something different. Your insight allows you to do that. So we want to cultivate all three the three of them encompass, I would say, a full and rich meditative life. A meditative life that is not necessarily predicated on on being on the cushion. It's predicated on being in life. Because where does your stuff arise?
In the mind.
In the mind. And what sets it off? Life. So where else are you going to practice? You can only practice in your life. If you really want transformation. It doesn't mean coming to retreat. It doesn't mean having a meditative practice isn't necessary, so we can have that distance, so we can step back, so we can practice. But if that's all we're doing and it's not being carried over in the actuality of our daily life, we will get very little results. It cannot be otherwise. It cannot be otherwise. So again, in terms of practice in daily life, mindfulness, stopping, quieting the mind, looking deeply, are the three aspects of we could say the meditative aspect. Now, in terms of the ongoing practice, in this tradition, we talk about working with the seeds. Have you talked about that here? A little bit. So this, do you remember, we've been talking about composting. So we're kind of like using gardening kind of analogies. But the other good one is to see that, and again, because you have been on retreat, because you have been at a distance from all the things in your daily life that you see is the cause of your difficulty. They haven't been here. And yet we've noticed we can still continue to have the same dramas. We don't really need live people, do we? they're just kind of convenient. They're convenient kind of stand-ins, so we can kind of continue our melodrama, thank God there are people in the world that we can project it onto and make believe that they're the cause of my anxiety, they're the cause of my anger, they're the cause of my despair, they're the cause of my, we go on and on. When the truth is, as you've learned by being on retreat 3 days, that you're quite capable of doing all that just by yourself. That is because the seeds of all this stuff is in our own minds. The potential of all our positive and negative mind states, good and bad, those that create happiness, well-being, ease, joy, love, understanding, etc., sympathy, etc., etc., and those that have the capacity of producing all the afflictive, negative mind states, they are all in our subconscious, which in Buddhism is called the storehouse consciousness. They're all there. The residue of all our experience that we've talked about having since childhood, the residue or the seeds of it, all lie within our own mind. And they, as you've noticed, they're always active. So that is why when you are sitting in meditation, you might have noticed that things keep coming up. Anybody notice that? And that it comes up not because you're consciously calling them up, but oftentimes, and most time, they're just coming and going, right? And if you try to see a pattern, if you kind of could follow them through a day, you would realize there's almost no pattern. Right? It can be something about lunch, it could be something about years from now, it could be something from the past, it could be something, a movie I heard, it can be. Now, why is that? Because our storehouse consciousness, these seeds are always bubbling up and down, always bubbling up and down, always bubbling up and down. Right? Also, they are triggered. So they can also be called up consciously, but also situations that remind them of all these habitual responses also trigger them. So when we understand that there is this vast reservoir of positive and negative seeds in me, that they are coming and going on their own, but they are also triggered by situations, as well as they can be consciously called up by me, such as when I do loving kindness meditation, or I think lovingly about somebody, I am sort of cultivating, I'm calling up those seeds of loving kindness that already exist in me, and I am cultivating them. Or in the same way, when a negative seed arises and I'm thinking harshly of somebody, I do have the possibility of letting go of it and doing something opposite in my thoughts or in my actions. So it is this capacity to understand about these positive negative seeds and understand that really what we're doing all day in terms of our daily practice is what? It's very simple. We are gardening. We are cultivating positive seeds, right? We are nourishing positive, the things we want to grow. And at the same time, we are cultivating, not nourishing, not watering, those seeds that we don't want to arise. And when they do arise, as they will arise according, to habit energy, we what? We don't indulge them. This may sound revolutionary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't indulge them because we are aware that a negative seed has arisen in me. And remember, our intention? Not to cultivate, these negative qualities? So if this then comes together with that, and you have a wonderful moment of healing and transformation. But if you are not aware that a negative seed has arisen in you, and if there isn't that intention not to cultivate them, it'll just continue. Is that clear? So this is, if you're asking what daily practice is, that's what it is. But it means that every day you are cultivating your intention, your aspiration. That is clear to you. When you're at work, when you're at home, when you're with your loved ones, when you're with your enemies, you know, wherever you are, when you're shopping, your aspiration to have a certain type of mind and to relate to the phenomena of life according to your conscious intention. And then as the seeds arise and pass away, you have a context in which to deal with them. That's why I'm not getting to the practical stuff to the third day. Many people were disappointed and frustrated. What? Come on, tell us what. Remember? I don't want to hear all this big stuff. This aspiration, intention stuff. Just telling me what to do. And you remember I said, that's not the problem. We already know what to do. We've read all the books. We've heard all the talks. We've talked about it endlessly. We've paid good money. And still, same old, same old. So, you know, getting clear about my life and my life condition. Getting clear about, so I really understand what caused it, what has caused me to be the way I am. And to find a place of nobler intention. Of altruistic vision, a place of goodness that aspires to a totally different kind of life to yourself, and then you bring that back daily life. Daily life, what are you dealing with? Seeds. All day long, that's all you're dealing with. Positive and negative seeds. And you just got to be clear. Let me say that again. You have to be clear. Let me say that again. So everybody say, no, I have to be clear. You got to say it to them. I have to be clear. And you got to ask yourself, do I know, am I clear about what are the positive seeds within my own consciousness, my mind, that I want to cultivate? Cultivate when? Claudia? When are we cultivating these seeds? All the time. When you're with your husband, when you're with your kids, when you're at work, right? Because when do these seeds arise? All the time. In the context of your life, right? And so we need to be clear. Oh, yeah. And don't be disgusted and don't be frustrated when the negative stuff, because why, Charlie? All this negative stuff's arising because we have been feeding the beast for years, right? It's just, you know, it's like, it's like the feral creatures in the neighborhood, you know. If we feed them, they will come around, right? They'll come around. They're used to being fed. So don't blame them for coming again. Why shouldn't they come? They're well taken care of in Charlie's house, aren't they? They're nurtured, they're nourished, they're petted, they're treated as something very special. I mean, who wouldn't show up? Right? So with negative seeds, we have to be uncompromising. We have to know a negative seed for what it is, which means you have to be able to label it for what it is. Right? You have to do your best not to cultivate them. If you have your wherewithal not to cultivate them. And secondly, when they do arise just because of habit energy, as many of them will, you know when they're arising and you don't feed them. You notice them, you hold them in mindfulness. You know, you don't, I'm aware you're here. And you take good, quick care so they can go back down. And hopefully because you haven't fed them, encouraged them, nourished them, they go back down a little weaker, a little less intense. And so over time you can see they will diminish because you're no longer feeding them. You're no longer giving them attention. That's why it's not good to fight with them. Many people struggle with those parts of themselves. When you struggle with them, you're only reinforcing them. You're telling them you're powerful and you're engaging with them. That is not the way to handle your seeds. You hold them in mindfulness. You stop. You see them for what they are. You don't resist them. You know them. You look deeply. You know their sources. You know why they arise. And then you do something different. Let them go down. You're not frustrated. You're not disgusted. You're not, you know, it's like they are just what they are. You know, do you blame the feral cat for coming around? No, it's hungry. I don't blame it. It's not personal. But on the other hand, if you don't want one in your yard because you know they eat birds, right? You don't feed it. You might even drive it away because you're cultivating something else, right? So in your garden, you want to grow. Usually, most people grow a garden when if they want a garden, they're not gardening their weeds, right? We laugh. That sounds so ridiculous, right? If you went to somebody's house and they just had a horrible, say, come look at my garden. You know what I mean? And they're out there fertilizing and watering their weeds. You go, this is crazy. Right? You know? Right? And yet, we spend half our day cultivating our weeds. Gardening is, we want to grow, you know, the major emphasis has to be on what? Anybody here have a garden? The major emphasis is on what? Flowers and vegetables and the good, right, it's cultivating positive things. Things that nourish, things that create beauty. That's what we want in a garden. And we know that we have to do some weeding, don't we? Because weeds also grow, so we have to, you know, pull them out and not, you know, not water them, etc. Right? It'd be crazy, wouldn't it, to spend a lot of time nourishing our weeds. But yet, that's what we do in our minds. We nourish bad behavior. We nourish bad speech. We nourish bad mind states. And then we get frustrated with ourselves. There might even be people who say, well, I I'm such an angry person, I've always been this way, or I've always been depressed, or I've always been anxious, I'm always going to be, you know. Once you say that, that is your truth. And I assure you, you will never change as long as you believe that. Because it's a belief. And beliefs arise where? In the mind. And the problem you're talking about is arising where? In your mind. And if you believe that about your mind, it'll come true. Because have you noticed this mind of ours will believe anything? Right? It'll believe anything. You know, 1 minute you can love somebody and think they're the most wonderful person in the world. Half an hour later, you can tell they're the worst person in the world. Right? Worthy of your hate. And your mind just goes along with it. Mind by itself has no bias. It is our conditioning and our thoughts that create that bias. When you understand that, you know you have to be very careful with this mind of ours. Right? And we have to be very clear about negative and positive, about things you want to grow and things you don't want to grow. And the things I don't want to grow, I do not plant, and if I find a weed, I pull it out. On the other hand, we are putting most of our energy where? This is important. You know, a lot of people are putting all their energy dealing with their stuff. Actually, in Buddhism, we put most of our energy creating the basis for all the positive mind states. Is that clear? So if all you're doing is dealing with your stuff, and you're not spending your mind day cultivating positive mind states, positive emotions, positive interactions, understanding, loving speech, supportive speech, developing confidence within yourself, developing confidence with others, you know, if we are not cultivating patience, if we're not cultivating acceptance, do you see what I'm saying? If we're not cultivating creating goodness and beauty in our life and in our relationships, then what is our life left with? Endlessly dealing with garbage. Right? I mean, if we are skillfully handling our garbage, right? Creating this wonderful loamy soil. Well, I mean, what are you going to do? Just have bags of soil around? You know, piles and piles of it? Full-time composter. No, you want to, now that you've created this soil, you want to plant things in it, don't you? That's what you want to be doing. That's why you're composting. Please remember that. Right? You're composting the garbage so you can plant nourishing fruits and vegetables. You can plant all kinds of beautiful flowers and bushes to give beauty and happiness and joy to your life, to others who come and enjoy. Right? I mean, that's what it's about. We have to do the weeding and the pruning so we can have a beautiful garden. So that's your intention. That's your aspiration. But again, remember we talked about spiritual bypassing, because we know we can't just jump to that. That we have to learn how to deal with the garbage. That we have to learn how to deal with the weeds. But don't make that your life's purpose. I mean, I've met people who are in therapy for 20, 30 years. And I was a therapist. You know, nobody's that screwed up. You know? I mean, there are people who are working on their inner child's, you know, childhood lasts how long? I mean, how long does real childhood last? What? 5-7 years. I mean, all right, I'll give you 5 or 7 years to work on your inner child. But if your child has not grown up in what in real time children do, there's a problem. Right? There's a problem. I mean, there are some people doing their inner child work 10, 20, 30 years on. That's pathological. You know? Please understand that. If there are wounded places in ourselves, just apply the medicine. It works. We're not here to work with our wounded parts our whole life. Right? We're here to create goodness. We're here to help others. You know? To help others, we have to heal our own wounds, but that's not a lifetime endeavor. Is that clear? What time are we stopping?
11.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, maybe you all know this. It's funny, every bunch of years I find it. Well, this is, I like this. But maybe everybody else knows it. Does everybody else know this poem, Autobiography in 5 Chapters by Portia Nelson? It's a poem that's kind of, yeah, it's a wonderful poem. It's been around the self-improvement, recovery movement for years, but it's very profound. So for those of you who know it or or maybe have heard me talk about it, but I think it's been years. Or it could have been last year, I guess. Anyhow, this is called Autobiography in Five Chapters. All right? How many people have not heard this? Oh, good. All right. Well, maybe once you read it, you'll realize you did hear it. You just didn't realize that's what it was called. So this is five short verses, okay? So this is number one. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am hopeless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. So this is, again, please understand that there may be some of us who go, well, I've passed beyond that. There may be others who are saying, that's exactly where I am. And there may be others saying, well, there are parts of me that are out of that, but parts of me are still in it. But this is a life of unconsciousness. This is a life when we're in darkness, there's no mindfulness, there's no capacity to stop and look deeply. I am just driven by my habit energy, right? Walking down the street, big hole, don't see it, fall in the hole, it's deep, it's cold, I don't know what to do, it's all over, you know, it keeps happening all over again, somebody else is responsible, it's not my fault, it's my parents, it's life, it's society, it's my condition, you know, whatever it is. And I'm just, you know, it's just an endless struggle to get out of it. Is everybody clear about chapter one? So that's, it sounds a little familiar. Good. And again, we may be in a place now where that really describes our life, or that may be just describe pieces. Okay. Chapter two. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Okay, are we clear? So in the second chapter, there's, if we say the first chapter is complete darkness, the second chapter, it's like just a little bit of twilight. Things we see a little bit. So now, as opposed to the last time, we are aware of the whole, but we're in denial. We would say denial. Here it says, "I pretend I don't see it." It means we're in denial that the hole is there, and if I fall in, the same thing's going to happen again. I'm in denial that the whole thing is happening. I don't see it. So I fall in again. But now, as before, it's the last time where I fell in and I'm lost and I feel hopeless. Now I'm kind of, I can't believe I did it again. You know, there's a self-critical thing, which is in a certain way good, because you realize you could do it differently. You see, the first one, there was no realization. Now, I can't believe I've done it again. But again, we still somehow, because we're in denial, because we're not willing to take responsibility, we still don't see what's causing this to happen. And we're still struggling. Okay. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. Okay, so we're still going. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it's there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open, I know where I am, it is my fault, I get out immediately. Okay, so now we are coming out of our darkness. We're coming out of the world where everything's obscured. And as opposed to this hopeless kind of just being driven by we don't even know. But we know it's not us. It's our childhood. It's our parents. It's our society. It's life. Right? It's life. That's what we think things are. Right? Now we see clearly what's going on. But we are, our understanding, our mindfulness, our aspiration for a different way is still weak, right? So even though we kind of see the whole, right, we still walk right into it. We can't stop. And there are many people who say that. You know, I mean, I can't tell many people say to me, you know, even as I'm doing it, I know what I'm doing, and I know that this is not going to have a good result, right? Stop. And that's what this one's talking about. Is that clear? You can kind of see it's evolutionary, but still the habit energy, at least you can name it now. This is just my habit energy. This is just my conditioning. Maybe is it, I don't know.
Do I sound better? Your hand is interfering.
All right, then I'll just stop moving my hand. So that's chapter 3. Chapter 4. And again, hopefully, as I'm saying this, everybody here is kind of running this through their own stuff. Number 4. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Okay. This is a good place, isn't it? You know, mindfulness, stopping, insight, understanding, clarity, right, have all come together. I know my stuff. I see it when it's arising. I don't fall in. Right? And again, hopefully there are some areas of your life where you see that's happened already. So you understand what this is about. The hole is still there, right? Our conditioned responses, our habit energy, may still be around for a while, but I know them now. They don't run me. I know my triggers. I know my stuff. I know my misperceptions. I know my lies. I know my, you know, I know it's a voice of my inner. I mean, I know all this stuff. And I don't follow it anymore. I don't fall in. I don't get seduced. I don't get suckered. Even though that voice, remember we said yesterday, even though that voice of habit energy of self talks with such conviction and authority, I know that voice. I know the voice of a con man. I know the voice of a used car salesman. I know that voice. I know the voice of a salesperson, right? I'm not angry with the salesperson, am I? No, that they're doing their job. They're selling something. But, you know, I don't blame them. They're just earning a living. My conditioned self is just trying to continue its drama going. That's all. It feeds on melodrama. It doesn't have a life outside of melodrama. I mean, what would our conditioned histrionic self do, right, if we were peaceful people? You know, wise, intelligent. It wouldn't have a job anymore. So it's. I don't mind it doing its thing. That's what it does, right? It sells melodrama. It sells scripts. You're the one who has to decide you're not buying anymore. I don't want a life of melodrama. I don't want a life of endless up and down and always having issues and always working through things. And oh, I'm done with that. I want a life of happiness and ease. I want to be relaxed, right? I want to experience positive emotions. That's what I want to spend my time doing. I walk down the street, there's a deep hole in the sidewalk, I walk around it. Now, the interesting thing is, this is called an autobiography in 5 chapters. Most people, even if they get this far, and not too many people get this far, stop here. Right? It's pretty good. I walk down the street, deep hole in the sidewalk, I walk around. This is what we talked about earlier. This is a life where it's all about not, you know, it's all about holes and not falling in holes. Right? And now I have gone from the place of totally unconscious, falling into holes, not knowing why I'm falling, getting stuck, can't get out, hopeless, despair. I've worked myself up to the point where? I walk down the street, I see my holes, I see the holes, I don't fall in, I walk around. Right? Most people would go, good life. You ready for chapter 5? Please listen very carefully. It's the shortest chapter. I walk down another street. Right? I walk down another street. That's what we're talking about. You've pulled out all the weeds, nice clear patch of land. You know, now it's time to plant new stuff. I walk down another street. You've heard the description of a spiritual life as being a spiritual path. A spiritual path. That's what we're talking about. You'll often hear me say, there is another way. And there is another way to live. There's another path to follow in this life. That's what she's talking about. And that's a big step, isn't it? Seeing that there's more to life, you know, than endlessly dealing with holes. And the problem is, in this life, we don't hear about chapter 5. We hear about up to chapter 4. Sometimes we don't even hear anything beyond chapter 3. Chapter 3 is, well, just a habit. Everybody has bad habits. Everybody has their good days and their bad days, right? Everybody? Yeah, just learn how to cope a little better with things. That's chapter 3. Life is about coping. Well, I still fall in. I still do it. Still break the dishes. Still hurt a few people. But I apologize afterwards. I see the error of my ways. I apologize. Clean up the dishes, you know. Do a little damage control. No, that's chapter 3. Chapter 5, I walk down another street. So here we are. Composting emotional afflictions into the soil of well-being, healing and transforming the separate self. So we have ended where we began. Almost 3 days later, each of us has a better understanding of what this is about. Have a very personal, very intimate sense within one's own body-mind of what that means. And hopefully there's more clarity about all the things that have been talked about. again at the end of retreat, like we have come to. The emphasis has to be on daily life. A retreat doesn't go on forever. We are all lay people, and where our life unfolds in the context of activity and relationships. And so please, hopefully, you have spent some time on this last day contemplating the world you're returning to. Each of us have our own unique world. And you are clear how you want to bring whatever practices, whatever understandings, whatever intuitions, whatever insights that you have gained in the context of this retreat. You are clear, very clear, about what you want to bring with you into your daily life. Again, you will, even though you have been away from your life, your quote-unquote daily life, from responsibilities, activities, and everything for 3 days, let me assure you, they have all continued. And that energy of how things have always been will greet you. So, right, so Gail, your TV will still be there in the evening, won't it? Right. You see, but hopefully you'll understand now that the problem is not the TV. No. And hopefully how you relate to that and how you relate to your evenings may be different. Okay, that's the important thing. And so whatever those things are in your life, you know, for people like Elzbieta and Claudio, who are deep in the midst of, and other people deep in the midst of family and children and work and balancing all these things, you understand, you know, what you need to do and how to go about it. And you're okay with that. You're okay with that. Alex is no longer saying "but."
I'm not saying anything.
Alex has taken a vow of silence.